nice. Anyone want to go and warm up the car? So, Christmas breakfast on Saturday, but we're needing some help setting up. And setup is Thursday night from 7 to 9, and we're looking for some help. So if you can help out with that, please let them know at the information desk. Otherwise, we're going to be eating off our laps. No one's going to enjoy that, so please let them know. Also, just to remind you, every year we do this, but on the Sunday before Christmas, which this year happens to be December 22nd, 3 weeks from today, we will be having a special offering, our community care offering. Now, if you're new to our church and you don't know what community care is, that's our fund of money that we use to take care of our people and people in the community when they have needs. So special needs come to the office, we need some resources to help them out, that's where this fund comes in. And so people have generously in the past given to the community care fund, and we've been able to distribute those funds to help a lot of people around Nanaimo. So be thinking about what you want to give that Sunday. Anything that's not designated that Sunday will go towards the community care offering. Okay. Are you ready? Are we ready? There we go. I want to start this morning by talking about probably one of the most awkward situations I've ever been in my life. And it was so awkward. As far as I can remember, I haven't spoken about this incident publicly, even though it's almost 30 years old. So this is, you get a little window into my life, into one of my, what some might consider to be a failure. It was December 25th, it was Christmas Day, 1992. And some of you who've heard me talk about this situation before knew that that particular Christmas, I spent that Christmas in the hospital. My dad was dying. I had found out just days before that he was dying from cancer. And so we spent the day in the hospital. Now, I was 19 years old at the time and knew enough that I thought, I knew that I didn't want these precious moments to go by without saying everything I needed to say. I just didn't kind of know what to say. And so my family's gathered around the bed, and we're making small talk, and we're opening presents, and it's just about time to go. And I just had this feeling like I gotta do more than just stand here like a lump. And so as my family is turning to go, I blurt out, "I'm proud of you, Dad." And my family all turned to me. And the reason they did is because these are the kind of words that were not spoken in the Ottenbright family. Words like, "I'm proud of you," or "I love you," or "I cherish you," those were not said in the Ottenbright family. So I felt very alone in that moment, very awkward. But then it got worse. Because my dad looked at me with his eyes yellowed from jaundice and his cheeks sunken in from cancer, and he said, "Why?" And I gotta say, in that moment, I was completely unprepared for that question. And I realized years later that the reason I was so unprepared is because I was so unrehearsed. I had so little practice in the art of affirmation. I didn't know what to say. I knew I should say, "I'm proud of you." I didn't know how to follow it up with specifics. I had no practice at this. And so in my family, so many of the relationships were distant because there was no such thing as affirmation. And maybe you grew up in a home that was very much like that. You might have grown up in, wait a second. That shouldn't be there. Hold on. Wait 1 second. There it is. You grew up in a home where you were trained to be tough. You didn't talk about feelings. Talking about feelings are for sissies and snowflakes, latte-sucking hippie tree-hugger types. You were trained to be tough, and so you didn't talk about things like feelings. And you might have heard me talk many times and say, we are designed for relationship. It's something that's hardwired into us. And you might hear me say that, and it's like a good infomercial. It sounds really good. It looks really good. But your actual experience of the product leaves you feeling a little bit empty. It doesn't quite work the same in real. And that's really what this series is all about. We've already looked at the importance and relationship of forgiveness, of grace, of boundaries last week. And this week, we are going to look at affirmation. Affirmation takes relationships down to bedrock. And these are in the wrong order for some reason, but let's go back. We are going to discover that we are to vent it to cement it. Let's say it together. Vent it to cement it. Okay, I caught some of you sleeping. Let's say it again. Vent it to cement it. Okay, let's get past Clint Eastwood here for a second. Let's get into what I'm going to be talking about. Now, the Bible has many examples of affirmation, and which is kind of surprising because it was written all by men in a time where being tough wasn't just going without your cell phone for 2 hours. These guys knew tough. This was thousands of years before Oprah and Dr. Phil made it okay to talk about feelings amongst men. Okay? And I could have brought many examples of affirmation in the Bible, because it spread throughout. But I wanted to focus on one particular relationship that really stood out to me. And it's the relationship between the Apostle Paul and the Church of Corinth. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Apostle Paul, this is a guy who grew up in religion. He was a master at religion, at impressing God with your behavior. And God delivered him from religion into a relationship with Jesus. And after that, he began to plant churches all around the Mediterranean. One of those churches was in Corinth. And Paul arrived in Corinth about the fall of 50 of the Common Era. 50, and he was there till about the spring of 52. So he was there about a year and a half. And after he left, things kind of went south, even though he poured a year and a half into this church. Can you imagine the Apostle Paul in your church for a year and a half? You'd think things would go really well. But I'm glad to say, that's terrible, isn't it? I'm glad to say, even the Apostle Paul couldn't make everything go well all the time. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with what was going on in the Church of Corinth, I have a Corinth church report for you. Just to fill you in a little bit, because you may not know what was going on in this church. You might be here this morning having walked away from the church for a long time because you're a little disgruntled with the church. And I understand, the church, being you and I, have a lot of problems. And we are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And we sin on occasion, and we hurt people. We acknowledge that. If you are an imperfect person, you are welcome with us. But I want to just talk a little bit about what was going on in that church. Because if you think the church today is messed up, if you think the Nanaimo Alliance Church is messed up, and I guarantee it is, not many amens on that one, okay. Yeah, all right. Here we go. This is what was going on in Corinth. First, one of the members of the church was having sex with his stepmother. Oh, yeah, no, it gets better. And the church celebrated it. You think we've got problems. They were like fist bumping one another. Hey, way to go, buddy, sleeping with your stepmom. Woo, how to go, freedom. It's like the 60s. But way back then, that was just one of the things that was going on. Also in this church, there were superiority complexes with their gifts. They would brag about how much their gift was better than the next person's gift. Hey, I'm a better Christian than you. Well, I'm certainly a better Christian than you. Can you imagine a church like that? This is what they did. Doesn't that sound like fun? Also, there were divisions over celebrities, so they would each follow a different celebrity speaker.
And then they talk about how their celebrity speaker's better than your celebrity speaker. You only follow Joyce Myers? What's the matter with you? I got Joel Osteen. Hey! You guys can talk about that over lunch. Oh, okay, divisions over celebrities. Then, lawsuits. They were actually suing each other over whatever. Can you imagine suing each other as a church? They were also, their services were in chaos. It wasn't this nice, neat, orderly thing where they had, you know, nice communion table. It was chaos in their services. And there was just general selfishness going on. When it came to the Lord's table, the rich, because it was more of a meal, and everyone kind of brought their own as kind of like a potluck, and the rich would get there first because they didn't have jobs, and they just started to chow down. And they ate everything. And then the poor would come, and they might not be able to bring anything, and guess what? There's nothing there. Could you imagine going to a potluck, a church potluck, where the rich got fed the most and the best and first, and the poor got... That's what was going on in this church. Look at that list. That is a very human church. Would you agree? Now, I just wanted to give you the context. Because this, by no stretch of the imagination, was a model church. Which makes what Paul says to them even more profound. So Paul was about to write to an openly sinning, litigious, arrogant, greedy church. And while he addressed these issues, he also affirmed them. Why? Because you can affirm people without endorsing their behavior. You can affirm people without endorsing their behavior. And I'm going to show you some examples. And you can do the same. So there are five key affirmations we find that Paul wrote to the church in Corinth. Remember, this is a messed up church. Very human. And the first thing he says, I am dedicated to you. Here we go. 2 Corinthians 7. It says, please open your hearts to us, Paul writes. We have not done wrong to anyone, nor led anyone astray, nor taken advantage of anyone. And get this, he says, I said before that you are in our hearts, and we live or die together with you. That is a statement of dedication. Said, no matter what, we're in it for the long haul. I'm devoted to you. I'm dedicated to you. We're going to go to the end together. Now, as far as I know, in the life of a follower of Jesus, there are three times, potentially, where this is more of a formal thing. The first one, of course, is when you become a follower of Jesus. And you say, I'm devoted to you, Jesus, my whole life. All of you for all of me. That's the first time. And that may lead very well into what we do now as far as church membership. Where we stand in front of the church and we say, I'm devoting myself to you. They said it says in the Bible that this is just what they did. They devoted themselves to one another. They said, I am dedicated to you. In our church membership handbook, it says, one of the things that we agree to as church members, I will not let my church be about my preferences and desires. In other words, I'm devoting myself to you. This, what we do, is no longer about me. And then, of course, the third one is marriage. All of you for all of me. Till death do us part is just a way of saying, I am dedicated to you. And here's Paul saying, I am dedicated to you, messed up church. How do you think that left them feeling? Have you ever had someone say, I am dedicated to you? Some of you have had that privilege, some of you have not. But for those of you who've had that privilege of someone standing up and saying, I am dedicated to you, how did that make you feel? I'm guessing it made you feel very secure. that you didn't have to worry about saying the right thing or doing the right thing. You're not walking on eggshells. When you know someone is dedicated to you, you are a little more free to be you. You feel safe. Now, do you think that's a good thing for relationships? It's a beautiful thing when you feel safe in a relationship. But you have to vent it. You have to get it out. You can't assume people just know that you're devoted to them. You have to say it. It has to get out there. This is one of the reasons we have a marriage ceremony. Because you just can't assume it. Well, can't you read my mind? You have to say it. Get it out there. I am devoted to you. You have to vent it to cement it. Saying these things, saying I'm devoted to you, will bring your relationship together. And that's one of the things that Paul did to the church of Corinth. Number two, I enjoy you. Oh, this is good. He writes, God who encourages those who are discouraged encouraged us by the arrival of Titus. So Titus came. His presence was a joy, but so was the news he brought of the encouragement he received from you. When he told us how much you long to see me, and how sorry you are for what happened, and how loyal you are to me, I was filled with joy. You filled my life with joy. What you did filled my life with joy. I enjoy you. You made a difference in my life. Now, he could have said, oh, it's about time, you crazy, messed up people. Instead, he said, you fill me with joy. You made my day. Who fills you with joy? Who fills you with joy? And the follow-up question is, do they know it? Do they know that they fill you with joy? What do you think the effect is? If someone has ever said, I enjoy you, I love spending time with you, how does that make you feel? It makes you feel cherished. It gives you purpose. You know, one of the greatest purposes we have on this earth is the effect that we have on other people. And when someone says, you have an effect on me, you have a positive effect on me, it fills us with purpose. And our lives have meaning. And there's a skip in our step because someone said, I enjoy you. When's the last time you told someone you enjoyed them? Good. But you got to vent it to cement it. You cannot hold it in because they cannot read your mind. Number three, another statement of affirmation. I believe in you. Look at what Paul writes to the church. He says, but thank God he has given Titus the same enthusiasm for you that I have. Wait, the same enthusiasm for you that I have. Paul had enthusiasm for this messed up church. He is now even more enthusiastic because of his great confidence in you. And I believe Paul shared that same confidence. What a statement. I have great enthusiasm for you. I believe your future is great, even though you're messed up right now. Isn't that great? Oh, man, I hope people can look at my messed up life and go, I still believe in you, buddy. I hope people do the same for you. They see great hope in you. They have great enthusiasm for you. Who are you enthusiastic about? I tell you, so often I doubt myself. I don't know about you, I doubt myself on a regular basis. I'm looking around the room at very confident people. I doubt myself as a husband, as a dad, as a pastor, as a follower of Jesus. I have lots of doubts in my mind. And it's when someone comes along in my messed upness and says, I believe in you, it makes all the difference. I feel encouraged. And if you've ever had the privilege of someone coming alongside of you and saying, I believe in you, I'll bet you felt encouraged too. Maybe it was a teacher, a parent, a coach, a friend, but you left feeling encouraged. That statement, "I believe in you," cemented a relationship with that person because they said it. They got it out. They affirmed you. "I believe in you." What a powerful statement. Next, this one you might be familiar with. "I love you." Paul writes to the church, "As surely as the truth of Christ is in me, no one in all of Greece will ever stop me from the boast about serving you at no cost." That's a whole different sermon. I'm not getting into that. Just pay attention to the last part. Why? "Because I don't love you, God knows that I do." I love you. You messed up bunch of litigious people, I love you. You celebrators of sexual sin, I love you. What a statement. Despite their messing up, I love you. Wow. These three words are sort of a magical boundary when it comes to romantic relationships, right? Oh, I didn't. There we go. Because we sort of wait till the other person says it, or we want to. Because once you cross that line, it's a little intense, right? But when you say, "I love you," it can cement a relationship. And it doesn't, obviously, that's not confined to romantic relationships. All our relationships, knowing that you are loved helps you feel adored. Do you feel adored this morning? Do you have someone in your life that you know adores you? If you do, oh, you are so blessed. So blessed. If they on a regular basis say, "I love you," oh, don't take that for granted, please. There's so many people in this room who'd love to hear that and don't. Because of the family that I was raised in, I didn't say those words to the people in my family until I was well into adulthood, until I was secure enough to not care about how they would react to those words. I'll talk more about that in a second. These words can strengthen the bond between family members, friends, married partners, but again, it cannot be assumed. You've heard the joke many times. I've said the joke many times. You know, married partners who say, I told you I loved you when we got married. Shouldn't that be good enough? I'm here to tell you it is not. You need to vent it to cement it. Number five, the last one. Paul writes and he says, "I will sacrifice for you." 2 Corinthians 12, he says, "I will gladly spend myself and all I have for you." What a statement. What? "Even though it seems that the more I love you, the less you love me." That's a whole other sermon too. But you might have been in relationships where it seems very lopsided at times. Well, Paul felt that. And yet he still said, "I will gladly spend myself, my life, and all I have for you." Now that's sacrifice. Willing to sacrifice. Do you have someone in your life that you know will sacrifice for you? If you do, you are very, very blessed. The effect is, when you know that there's someone there who has your back, you feel very cared for. Do you feel very cared for this morning? I hope so. I hope so. Now, when it comes to feelings, some of us have more of a dragnet policy. Just the facts. Don't bother me with feelings. And yet, here's Paul talking about his feelings towards this church. Why? Simply, you got to vent it to cement it. So, in response, there are three things that we can do. If you want to affirm people, if you want to live a life of affirmation, here's three things that you have to do. First of all, focus on agreements. We spend way too much of our day focusing on the things that we don't agree on. In our marriages,
in our families, in our workplaces, in our churches, far too much time on the things that we don't agree on. Paul focused on the agreements. He knew that they knew Jesus lived the life we should have lived. He died the death we should have died. He rose again. He is our hope. He is our Savior. That is number one. Highest priority. You can mess up a lot of things. Do not mess up that one. You can disagree about other things and still remain very close as a church in this case. This church, let's just spell it out. We don't agree on everything, do we? You guys have attended here before, right? We don't agree on everything. I could open up all kinds of cans of worms. The role of women in leadership, abortion, politics, music, holidays, the role of the pastor and elders, which parades to go to, and on and on and on and on. There are tons of things you and I will not agree on. But we agree on the most important things. Jesus died for us. God became a man. He rose again to give us hope of eternal life. And the gates to the kingdom are open to all. These are the essentials of our faith. These are the things that we agree on. These are the things that keep us coming together week after week and year after year. Focus on agreements. And when you focus on agreements, that's when it's much easier to affirm other people, because you don't see all the disagreements, you see the agreements between you. Second thing is love supernaturally. Paul is such an amazing example here because you have to understand where Paul is coming from. It wasn't that long ago, Paul was killing people like the people in the Corinthian church. He was rounding them up, throwing them in jail, and executing them. What would make a person go from that to affirming this messed up group of people? Only the Spirit of God. That's it. He was transformed from the inside out. He loved them supernaturally. And if you want to be an affirming person, that has to come from God's Spirit from within. God is a God of love. And when you have God living inside of you, as all followers of Jesus do, that love can come out and you can affirm freely. And third one is just what I've been saying all along. You have to externalize the internal. Some of us feel these things and don't say anything. What a tragedy. I know, because I do the same thing. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But here's what we got to know. What is left unsaid is also unheard. What is left unsaid is also unheard. The people around us don't know how you feel. And it leaves question marks in the relationships. Put another way, what is unsent is unreceived. So, what have we learned so far? Paul affirmed, again, this sinning, messed up church with, I am dedicated to you, I enjoy you, I believe in you, I love you, and I will sacrifice for you. How do you think they felt after that? Probably pretty good. The effect is they felt safe and cherished and encouraged and adored and cared for. Now stop right there. All of this, you probably already know. I just spent the last 20 minutes telling you what you already know. So let's dig a little deeper. There are three reasons, I figure there's probably more, why you and I don't say anything, why we don't vent it. Three reasons why we avoid affirming other people. Let's see if any of these hit home with you. We fear it being used against us. So someone says, hey, you said you were devoted to me. That means I can do whatever I want, right? You're not going to do anything. We fear that somehow our affirmation will be used as a weapon
against us in our relationship. And so we say nothing. We don't vent it. Keep it to ourselves. We worry how someone may react. If I say I love you, you might come back with, I know. Or that's nice. Or I enjoy spending time with you too. And you might get rejected. And so we're afraid. We worry. We don't say anything. And third, we might feel guilty that it's not always true. I may say I'm dedicated to you, but you know what? Sometimes I'm just selfish. And I don't always follow through on my commitments. Anyone who is married is guilty of this. And so we don't say anything. We keep it to ourselves. But you'll notice the common denominator in all this? It's all about me. My fear, my worry, my guilty feeling. And it's only when we live a life that is not focused on me that we can become more and more affirming of others. The more our lives center around me, the less I'm going to affirm other people. And in the end, that's why we often don't affirm other people. It's our self-centeredness. Let's dig a little further. I am dedicated to you. I enjoy you. I love you. I love you. I will sacrifice for you. If these are so essential in a relationship, then surely, surely, God has expressed these things to us. I'm here to say that He has. And some of you really need to hear this morning. Some of you right now are feeling very distant from God. Some of you have been feeling that way for a long, long time. And I want you to know that the Bible is an affirmation anthology. When you look at it carefully, God is saying over and over again things that are affirming of all the people who follow Him. I want to read to you just a few, just to go through again that same list. And I want you to soak in. I want you to hear God's voice in it, not my voice. I want you to hear God's voice in this for you. I'm going to go through this list slowly. I am dedicated to you. This is Jesus speaking. I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. I am dedicated to you. I enjoy you. Jesus said, Father, I want these whom you have given me to be with me where I am. I want them with me. I want you, Jesus is saying. I want you with me. My heart's desire is that you would join me for all eternity. Why? I enjoy you. I enjoy you. I believe in you. Jesus said, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere. Jesus left the whole plan of the expansion of the kingdom in the hands of people like you and me. That's the whole plan. How much more confidence could He possibly have in us? He says, I believe in you. Even though you're messed up, even though you're broken and hurting, I believe that the kingdom will be expanded through you. I believe eternity will be made different because of you. You will be my witnesses. Not I hope you will be. Not I think you will be. You will be. I believe in you. I love you. Jesus said, I have loved you. Talking about us, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Remain in my love. That last sentence is not so much a command as it is an invitation. Come, remain in my love. Come, I love you. I loved you even as the Father has loved me. What a statement. I talked about this before. Jesus couldn't have said it more powerfully or more profoundly than to say, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Right now he's saying to you, I love you. Last one. I will sacrifice for you. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. I am dedicated to you. I enjoy you. I believe in you. I love you. I will sacrifice for you. This is what God is saying to you this morning. And if you don't know the person who said this, the invitation's wide open to you this morning. If you would stop resisting, only stop resisting his plan for you, he will come in and he will live inside of you, and he will say these things over and over to you. I am dedicated to you. I enjoy you. I believe in you. I love you. I will sacrifice for you. I want to leave you with a challenge. And the challenge is this. Right now, there's someone in your life who is desperate to hear these things. Could be a spouse. Could be a kid. We're getting together for Christmas, many of us. In just a few weeks, family's coming home. We might be going to family. Probably everyone we lock eyes with this Christmas is going to want to hear something like this. The question is, can we allow the God of love to speak through us? To get over our selfishness, over our fears, over our worries, and just say what's on our hearts. The same thing that the Father is saying to you now. I challenge you. If this has never been part of your vocabulary, make it part of your vocabulary. If you want to have strong relationships, affirmation has got to be a part of it. You can't leave the people in your life guessing. God never did that with us. He didn't let us just hope he feels great about us. He told us time and time again, more than that, he demonstrated it for us on the cross. Take the opportunities while you have them. I don't want any of you being in a situation like I was in the Christmas of 92. Without words to say to a man who desperately needed to hear them. Take the opportunity today.